Kylo tried to gawk at the right things as he was ushered through the Geyer estate. Azoth, Mama Kay had told him, would gawk at anything big or gold. Baronet Kyler Skern would gawk only at things that were both, and the art. Logan had invited him to visit to make amends for hitting him, and Kylo's first job for the Sakage was to make sure they became friends. The porter escorted him to another better-dressed man. Kyler almost greeted him as Duke Geyer before realizing that he must be the Geyer's chamberlain. The chamberlain took him through a vast entry hall with dual stairs that climbed three stories, flanking an enormous marble statue of two men, twins facing each other in battle, each seeing the same opening in the other's defense, each lunging. It was one of the most famous statues in the world, Mama Kay had told Kyler, the Grask Twins' Doom. In history, Mama Kay said, the Grask twins had been heavily armored, and during a long battle, each had lost the thin tabards that, at the time, were all men wore over plate mail, and all that identified them as they were separated from their standard-bearers. They had, indeed, killed each other, though each had avoided the other in earlier battles. Here, the men were naked, except for a shield and sword. Because of the shield's placement, each was seeing his twin's face for the first time, even as he struck the death blow. The chamberlain took Kyler up the stairs and down one long wing of the estate. The hallway was wider than most of the alleys in the Warrens. Both sides were crowded with marble busts and paintings of men speaking, men fighting, men seizing women, families moving, women mourning, the aftermath of battles, and horrible monsters boiling out of gaps in the ground. Every picture was framed with heavy gold leaf. Most were big. Walking behind the chamberlain, Kylo could gawk as much as he wanted, and he did. Then they stopped at a huge door. The door opened to a library with dozens of shelves in orderly rows, and the walls lined with books and scrolls to a height of two stories.
My lord, Baronet Kyler Stern.
Logan Geyer rose from a table with an open scroll laid across it.
Kyler! I was just finishing. I borrowed this scroll from... never mind. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me, Duke Geyer. Your estate is beautiful. The statue of the Grask twins is breathtaking.
Azoth was reciting it the way Mama Kay had taught him, but now he meant it.
Please, Logan, you're most kind. You really like it.
The "you're most kind" gave him away. Logan was trying as hard to be an adult as Kylo was. Kylo was nervous because he was a fraud, but Duke Logan felt like a fraud too. The title was too big and too new for him to feign comfort convincingly. So Kylo answered honestly.
Actually, I think it's amazing. I just wish they weren't naked.
I know. Most of the time, I don't notice it anymore, but every once in a while, I come in the door and there's two huge naked men in my house. Because of my new duties, I'm meeting all my father's retainers and friends again. Really, it's a chance for the ladies to introduce their daughters and hope that I fall madly in love with them. I was greeting a lady and her daughter. Well, I won't name names, but they are beautiful women and very prim, very modest. So I'm pretty tall, right? And they both have to really look up to me in the eye. And as I'm talking and I am in the middle of a story and the mom is tittering and the daughter looks utterly captivated and I start to wonder if I've got something in my hair or on my ear or something because they both keep glancing just a bit to the side.
Oh, no.
Well, I glance over my shoulder and there's three times life size, this marble genitalia. And there's this moment where they realize that I've noticed that they've been looking over my shoulder the whole time. And I realize that this is the first time that the daughter has ever seen a naked man. And I totally forgot what story I was telling them.
Large genitalia.
Kylo was desperately thankful that Logan had given enough context so he could figure out what genitalia meant. Did all nobles talk like this? What if the next time Logan gave the punchline without the context? Logan pointed to a portrait on the library wall of a square-jawed, bald man dressed in an unfamiliar style.
I have to thank him for that. My great-great-great-grandfather, the art lover.
The Grask twins actually led like six battles against each other.
You know their story? Well, not many people our age do.
Belatedly, Kyler realized the risk of posing as a story lover to this man who loved books and could actually read them.
I really like old stories, but my parents don't really have any use for me wasting my time filling my head with stories.
You really do like stories? Well, Elaine always starts pretending to snore when I talk about history.
Elaine? Oh, Elaine Gunder. Prince Elaine Gunder the 10th. Logan's world really is different.
Well, look at this.
Logan beckoned Kyler to the table.
Here, read this part.
Be happy to, if I could read.
Kyler's heart seized up. His disguise was still so fragile.
Oh, you sound like my tutors. I don't want to read for an hour while you're twiddling your thumbs. Why don't you tell me the good parts?
I feel like I'm doing all the talking. It's kind of rude.
I don't think you're being rude. Is it a new story, or what?
Logan's eyes lit up, and Kyler knew he was safe.
No, it's the end of the Alcestis cycle, right before the Seven Kingdoms fall. My father's having me study the great leaders of the past. In this case, Joris and Alcestis, of course. When they were under siege at Blackbarrow, his right-hand man, Ezra the Mad... Well, it wasn't Blackbarrow yet, and Ezra didn't go hide out in Ezra's wood for another 50 years or something. Anyway, Ezra's maybe the best mages ever behind Emperor Joris and Alcestis himself. Well, they're under siege at what's now Blackbarrow, and Ezra starts making the most amazing stuff. The war hammers of Orin Raisin, fire and lightning traps even untalented soldiers can use. Turok, the Sword of Power. Ayurs, the Staff of Law, and then these six magic artifacts, Kakari. They each look like a glowing ball, but the six champions can squeeze one, and it melts and covers their whole bodies like a second skin and gives them power over their element. Ericus de Ardrul gets the skin of silver liquid metal that makes him impervious to blades. Corvair Blackwell becomes Corvair the Red, the Master of Fire. Trace of Agulania goes from grossly ugly to the most beautiful woman of the era. Orin Raisin gets earth, weighs 1,000 pounds and turns his skin to stone. Irenaea Blockway gets the power of everything green and growing. Shrad Marden gets water and can suck the very liquid from a man's blood. Well, the thing that has always made me curious is that Joris and Alcestis was a great leader. He brought together so many talented people, and lots of them were difficult and egotistical, and he put them in harness together, and they worked. But at the end, he insults one of his best friends, Achilles Thorn, and gives a Kakari to Shrad Marden instead, whom he doesn't even like. Do you know Achilles Thorn?
I've heard the name.
Achilles was this amazing fighter, but a noble fool. No subtlety. He hated lies, politics, and magic, but put a sword in his hand and he'd go charging in an enemy force solo if he had to. He was so crazy and so good that his men would follow him anywhere. But he was all about honor, and seeing lesser men honored before him was a huge insult. And it was that insult that led Achilles to betray Jolson. How could Jolson have missed it? He had to have known he was insulting him.
What do you think?
It was probably something boring, like that there was a war going on and everyone was exhausted and starving and not thinking clearly, and Jolson just made a mistake.
So, what does that teach you about being a leader?
Eat your vegetables and get enough sleep.
How about be nice to your inferiors, or they might kick your ass.
Are you asking me to spar, Baronet Stern?
Your exalted dukeliness! It will be my pleasure to take you down.
Kyler stepped into the safe house, flushed from his victory. He'd gotten 3 touches to Logan's 2. Logan fought better, but as Mama Kay had told Kyler, he'd also grown a foot in the last year and hadn't adjusted to his new height yet.
Not only did I just make Logan Gaia my friend, I also beat him in sparring.
Durzo didn't even look up from the calcinator. He turned the flame up higher beneath the copper dish.
Good. Now never spar with him again. Hand me that.
Kyler took a flask from under the whirling tubes of the alembic and gave it to him. Durzo poured the thick blue mixture into the calcinator.
Why not?
Get the slops, boy.
Kyler grabbed the pig's slop bowl and brought it to the table.
We fight differently from what any of this city's sword masters teach. If you spar with Logan, you will adopt his by-the-book style and become a worthless fighter. Or you'll give away that you're being taught something utterly different, or both.
Kyler scowled at the calcinator. His master was right, of course, and even if he weren't, his word was law.
Master, do you know why Jorsen Alcestis would insult his best friend by not giving him a kakari?
Maybe he asked too many questions.
Logan said Akela Storm was the most honorable of Jorsen's friends, but he betrayed Jorsen and that led to the fall of the Seven Kingdoms.
Most people aren't strong enough for our creed, Kyla. So they believe comforting illusions like the gods or justice or the basic goodness of man. Those illusions fail in war. It breaks men. That's probably what happened to Achilles.
Are you sure?
Sure. I'm not sure about what the nobles here did 7 years ago when they ended slavery. How would anyone be sure about what happened hundreds of years ago far away? Here, take this to the pig.
Kyler picked up the slops and took them to the pig they'd recently acquired from Master Blint's experiments. As he was returning, he saw Blint staring at him as if about to say something. Then there was a small whoosh as flame leaped from the copper plate behind Master Blint. Before Kyler could flinch, Blint whirled around. A phantom hand stretched out from his hands and grabbed the metal plate directly from the fire and set it down on the table. Then the hand was gone. It happened so fast, Kylo wasn't sure he hadn't imagined it. The plate was smoking, and what should have been blue powder was now a black crust. A black crust that Kylo had no doubt he would soon be scraping off until the copper shone.
Damn. See, you get caught up in the past and you become useless in the present. Come on, let's see if that stinking pig's still alive. Then we need to do something with your hair.
The pig wasn't still alive. And after the amount of poison it had ingested, it wasn't safe to eat. So Kyler spent half the day cutting it into pieces and burying it. After that, Master Blint made him strip to the waist and rubbed a pungent paste through his hair. It burned his scalp, and Blint made him keep it in for an hour. But when he finally rinsed the hair clean, Blint showed him his own reflection in the glass, and he barely recognized himself. His hair was white blonde.
Just be thankful you're young. I would have had to smear it on your eyebrows, too. Now get dressed. The Azoth clothes. The Azoth persona.
I'll get to go with you. On a job.
Get dressed.
I understand why apparent consumption is 900 gunders. I'm sure you have to do multiple poisonings to mimic the disease. But 1,500 for apparent self-murder? Ridiculous. Stab your man and put the knife in his hand.
How about we start again? You speak as if I'm the best wet boy in the city, and I'll speak as if there's a chance this side of hell that I'll take the job.
The tension sat thick in the upstairs room of the inn. Lord General Brant Agon wasn't pleased.
Why does faking a suicide cost 1,500 gold?
A properly staged suicide takes months, depending on the debtor's history. If I'm after a known melancholic, that can be shortened to 6 weeks. If he's tried suicide before, it can be as little as a week. I gain access in one way or another and administer special concoctions.
Azoth was trying to pay attention, but there was something about being back in his old clothes that made the illusions of the last weeks come crashing down. Kylo was gone, and not because Azoth was following orders and pretending to be Azoth. Kyler had been a mask of confidence. It had fooled Logan, and it had fooled Azoth for a little while, but the mask had fallen away. He was Azoth. He was weak. He didn't understand what he was doing here, or why, and he was scared.
The debtor becomes depressed, withdrawn, suspicious. Symptoms gradually worsen. Then, maybe a favorite pet dies. The target is already peevish and paranoid, and soon he lashes out at his friends. The friends who visit, at least those who take refreshment, grow irritable while they are with the debtor. They quarrel. They stop visiting. Sometimes the target writes the note himself. Sometimes he even commits the suicide himself, though I monitor that closely to make sure he chooses an appropriate method for the effect desired. When given proper time, no one suspects anything but self-murder. The family itself will often hush up the details and scatter what little evidence there is.
By the High King's beard, is such a thing possible?
Possible? Yes. Difficult? Very. It takes a considerable number of carefully mixed poisons. Do you know that everyone reacts differently to poisons? And a huge amount of time. If a forged note is required, the target's correspondence and journals are analyzed so that not only the handwriting, but also the writing style and even certain choices of wording are identical. Assassination is an art, my lord. And I am the city's most accomplished artist.
How many men have you killed?
Suffice it to say, I'm never idle.
General Agon fiddled with his beard and continued looking through the handbill Master Blint had given him, obviously unsettled.
May I ask about others, Master Blint?
I prefer that you only inquire about those deaths you're seriously considering.
Why is that?
I value secrets very highly, as I must. So I don't like to discuss my methodology. And to be honest, knowing too much tends to frighten those who employ me. I had a client some time ago who was very proud of his defenses. He asked me how I'd fulfill a contract on him. He irritated me, so I told him. Afterward, he tried to hire another wet boy to kill me. He was turned down by every professional in Scenaria. He ended up hiring an amateur.
You give yourself the status of a legend.
I'm not suggesting that I terrify every wet boy in the city. The fact is that we professionals are, if not a close group, at least a small one. We're colleagues, some of us even friends. The second wet boy he went to was Scarred Rabel.
I've heard of him. Apparently the second best assassin in the city.
Wet boy. And a friend of mine. He told me what this client was doing. After that, well, if a military metaphor works better for you, it would be like trying a small raid on a city that was expecting it instead of an unsuspecting city. In the second case, it might work. In the first, it's suicide.
I see.
The general paused for a moment. Apparently surprised Master Blint knew who he was. Then suddenly grinned.
And you're a tactician, too.
How so?
You haven't had many contracts taken out on you since you started telling that story, have you?
Not a one. After all, diplomacy is an extension of warfare.
We usually say that warfare is an extension of diplomacy. But I think I agree with you. I once found myself outnumbered and forced to hold a position against the Lycanoct for 2 days to wait for reinforcements. I had some captives, so I put them in a vulnerable position and told their guards we would receive reinforcements at dawn. During the fighting, the prisoners were allowed to get free and promptly told their superiors the news. The Lycanoct army was so disheartened that they held back until we had been reinforced. That diplomacy saved our lives. Which brings us back to the matter at hand. I need some diplomacy that's not on this list of yours. I'm afraid I've not been completely forthright with you, Master Blint. I'm here for the king.
Master Blint's face went suddenly devoid of emotion.
I understand that by telling you that, we might lose the man who provided me with your name. But the king deems this to be worth risking the lives of both a contact and one of his ministers. Namely, myself.
You haven't done anything foolish like surround the building with soldiers, have you?
Nothing of the kind. I'm here alone.
Then you've made a wise choice today.
More than one. I've chosen you, Master Blint. And I've chosen to be honest with you, which I hope you appreciate. As you know, the king's wealthy, but not politically or militarily strong. That's a bitter pill, but it's not news. Our kings haven't been strong for 100 years. Alain Gunder wishes to change that. But in addition to internal struggles, of which you no doubt know more than I'd care to learn, the king has recently learned of some rather devious plots to steal vast sums of money, not only from the treasury, but, in a multitude of schemes, also from almost every nobleman in the country. The idea being, we think, that Scenaria becomes so impoverished that we'll be unable to maintain an army.
Sounds like a lot of money to steal without anybody noticing.
The Chancellor of the Exchequer has noticed. He's the one arranging it. But no one else has noticed yet. The schemes are little short of brilliant. The plot won't even ripen for 6 or 10 years. Men are being placed in key positions and have as yet done nothing wrong. There's more, much more, but you don't need to know it.
What do I need to know?
I've made a study of you, Master Blint. Though information about you is difficult to find. Everyone knows that the Sakage holds an enormous amount of power here. People outside the country know it. Kalidor knows it. The king needs you for more than a dozen jobs, spanning years. Some will involve simple assassination, some will involve information planting, and some will not involve killing at all, but simply being seen. God King Ursul must believe the Sakage and its assets have an alliance with us.
You want me to become a government agent?
Not exactly.
And I suppose you'd give me a pardon for all I've done?
I've been authorized to offer that.
No, Lord General. Good day.
I'm afraid I can't take no for an answer. The king has forbidden it.
I do hope you're not planning on threatening my life.
First,
the Lord General looked at Azoth for the first time.
We'll kill the boy.
So?
And we'll kill your lover. I believe her name's Vonda.
You can kill the bitch. But that might give you some trouble, considering she's 4 months dead.
And we'll kill this Mama Kyrena, who seems to be your only friend. Then we'll come after you. I don't want it to be this way, but this is what the king offers.
You're making two mistakes. First, you're assuming that I value other people's lives more than my own. How can you know what I do and believe such a thing? Second, you're assuming that I value my own life.
Please understand, I'm under orders. Personally, I'd rather have nothing to do with you. I think it's beneath the dignity of a king to hire criminals. I think it's immoral and foolish for him to put money in your purse rather than chains on your wrists. I find you abhorrent. A wreck of a human being, barely resembling what once must have been a man. But the king has decided we need a sellsword like you. I'm a soldier. I've been sent to get you, and I won't fail.
And you're making a tactical blunder. The king might kill my apprentice, my friend, and even me. But at the least, he will have lost his Lord General. A poor trade.
I don't think he would find my death to be such a very great loss.
Ah, figured that out, have you? This may be the first time you've seen me, Brant Agon, but it isn't the first time I've seen you.
So you've seen me, so have half the people in the city.
Does your wife still crowd your side of the bed? Sweet, isn't it? Does she still wear that drab nightgown with the daisies embroidered on the hem? You really love her, don't you?
Lord General Agon froze.
You call me abhorrent. You owe me your life.
What?
Didn't you ever wonder why you got a promotion instead of a knife in the back? I was in your house the night King Davin died, when you and Regnus Gaia met. I was to kill your wife as a warning to you. Later, the prince would offer you a better marriage to a young noblewoman who would be able to give you sons. And I was authorized to kill both you and Regnus if you were plotting treason. I spared you. And I don't get paid unless I leave corpses. I don't expect your gratitude, Lord General, but I demand your respect.
You told Elaine that my price was the promotion. He thought he bought me off with a promotion rather than a wife.
Azoth could see General Agon mentally reviewing comments he must have heard over the last 4 months, and getting sicker and sicker.
Why?
You're the illustrious general, the old war hero, you tell me.
Putting me in charge of the army divided the Sakage's enemies. It kept the king from putting someone he could trust in charge of the military. You bastards have got people everywhere, don't you?
Me? I'm just a sellsword. I'm just a wreck of a human being.
You've given me much to think about, Master Blint. Though I still believe the murders you've committed merit hanging. I dishonored you and myself with my hasty words. I apologize. My apology, however, has no effect on the king's determination that you serve him. I...
Get out! Get out! If you reconsider your threats, I'll be here for a few minutes.
The general rose and, watching Master Blint carefully, walked to the door. Master Blint stared at the door and scooted back from the table. Instead of relaxing now that the general was gone, he tensed. Everything about him spoke of potential action. He looked like a mongoose waiting for a serpent to strike.
Step away from the door, Azoth. Stand by the window.
There was no hesitation. Azoth had learned that lesson. He didn't have to understand, he just had to obey.
Cursed hell! Blint!
Azoth stood by the window and looked at Master Blint, but the man's pockmarked face betrayed nothing. The Lord General lurched in, sword drawn.
What have you done?
The Lord General's knees bowed, and he leaned heavily against the doorframe to keep from falling. Master Blint didn't say anything. The General blinked and tried to straighten, but a spasm passed through his body as his stomach cramped.
Ow!
I put contact poison on the door latch. It seeps right through the skin.
But if we'd reached a deal...
I'd have opened the door for you. If you'd worn gloves, I had other plans. Now I want you to listen very closely. The king is an incompetent, treacherous, foul-mouthed child. So I'm going to make this very clear. I'm a first-rate wet boy. He's a second-rate king. I won't work for him. If you want, you can hire me yourself. I'll kill the king, but I won't kill for him. And there's no way you or he can pressure me. I know he won't believe that, because Alain Gunder is the kind of man who believes he can get whatever he wants. So here's why he's going to believe.
Master Blint stood.
First, I'm going to leave a message for him tonight in the castle. Second, you're going to investigate what happened to Count Yosa Glynn. He was the client who betrayed me. Third, there's already what's happened to you. And fourth, oh, do sit, Agon, and put away the sword. It's insulting.
Lord General Agon crashed into a chair. The long sword fell from his fingers. He didn't appear to have the strength to pick it up. Regardless, his eyes were still clear, and he was hearing every word Master Blint said.
Lord General, I don't care who he kills. I know you have this inn surrounded, and there are crossbowmen covering the windows of this room. They don't matter. More importantly, the king's threats don't matter. I will be no man's lapdog. I serve who I will, when I will, and I will never serve Alain Gunder. Azoth, come here. Azoth here is my best apprentice. He's agile, he's smart. He learns things after being told once. He works tirelessly. Azoth, tell the general what you've learned about life.
Life is empty. Life is meaningless. When we take a life, we aren't taking anything of value. Wet boys are killers. That's all we do. That's all we are. There are no poets in the bitter business.
Lord General, are you with me?
I'm with you.
Then know this. I'd kill my own apprentice before I'd let you use him against me.
The general jerked sharply in his chair as if shot. He was staring at Azoth. Azoth followed his gaze to his own chest. Several inches of bloodied steel were protruding from him. Azoth looked at the steel. He recognized that blade. He'd cleaned it that day he went to look for Dahlgirl. Then, Azoth was drawn to the location of the dagger. At that angle on a child's chest, it would have clipped the fat vessel above the heart. If so, the debtor would go down as soon as the dagger was drawn out. There would be a lot of blood. The debtor would die within seconds. Azoth's body jerked as the dagger disappeared. He was vaguely aware of his knees folding. He slumped over sideways and felt something warm spilling over his chest. The wood planks of the floor jostled him unmercifully as he sprawled over them. He lay facing up. Mr. Blint was holding a bloody dagger in his hand.
The monster blade just stabbed me.
What had he done? He thought Master Blint had been pleased with him. It must have been Dahlgirl. He must have still been mad about it. It had seemed things were going so well. There was white gold light everywhere, and he was warm. So warm.
Your Majesty, please.
King Alain Gunder the Ninth threw himself down into his throne.
Grant, it's one man! One! You'd have me send my family to the country for fear of one man?
Your Majesty, the definition of man might not cover Durzo Blint. I understand the implications.
Indeed! Do you know the talk it will cause if I send my family away on a moment's notice? Damn! I know what they say about me. I know! I'll not give them this to drool on, Brent. No!
Your Majesty, this assassin is not given to idle threats. For the sake of all that's holy, he murdered his own apprentice just to make a point.
A sham! Come on, General! You were drugged! You couldn't possibly know what was going on.
My body was afflicted, but not my mind. I know what I saw.
Maybe you saw him kill a boy. Who cares? It was obviously some street urchin rat thing that he picked up for the purpose of impressing you. And obviously it worked.
With all due respect, sire, you're mistaken. I've dealt with formidable men. I faced Dorgan Dunwall in single combat. I fought Underlord Greyblin's Lyknocht Lancers.
Yes, yes, 1,000 goddamn battles from my goddamn father's time. Very impressive. But you never learned anything about ruling, now did you?
Not like you have, Your Majesty.
Well, if you had, General, you'd know that you can't damage your own reputation. Flee my own castle in the night.
There was no working with him. The man shamed Aegon and should have shamed himself. Yet Aegon was sworn to him, and he decided long ago that an oath measured the man who gave it. It was like his marriage. He wouldn't take back his vows simply because his wife couldn't give him children. But did vows hold when your own king had plotted to take your life? And not in honorable battle, but with an assassin's blade in the night? That had been before Aegon had sworn his allegiance to the man, however. Had he known then what he knew now, he would have chosen to die rather than serve Alain Gunder the Ninth.
Your Majesty, may I at least have permission to hold an exercise tonight for my guards and include your mage? The captain is in the habit of doing such things unannounced to keep the men at the ready.
Oh, to hell with you, General! You and your goddamn paranoia! Fine. Do as you please.
The king's predecessor, Davin, had been empty-headed too, but he'd known it, and he deferred to his counselors. Alain the Tenth, this king's son, was only 14 years old, but he showed promise. He seemed to have gotten some of his mother's intelligence, at least.
If the Tenth were old enough to take power, maybe I'd provoke this assassin. Dear God, maybe I'd hire him.
General Aegon shook his head. That was treason, and it had no place in a general's mind. Fergan Safasti had been appointed to serve in Cenaria more for his political acuity than his talent. The truth was, he barely earned his blue robe. But his talents, if not his talent, had served him well in Cenaria. The king was both stupid and foolish, but he could be worked with if one didn't mind petulance and showers of curses. But tonight, Fergan was wandering the castle as if he were a guard. He'd appealed to the king, but Alain the Ninth, they called him Niner for short, the nine-year-old, and not the Ninth, only when drinking with friends, had cursed him and ordered him to do whatever the Lord General said. As far as Fergan was concerned, Lord General Aegon was a relic. It was too bad that he hadn't been able to adapt to Niner. The old man had things to offer. Then again, the fewer counselors the king had, the more important Fergan became. Disgusted with his knight's assignment, what was he looking for anyway? Fergan continued his lonely circuit of the castle yard. He'd considered asking for an escort, but mages were supposed to be more deadly than any 100 men. If that wasn't exactly true in his case, it didn't do him any good to advertise the fact. The castle yard was an irregular diamond, 300 paces wide and almost 400 long. It was bordered on the northwest and southeast by the river, as the Plith, split for a half mile by Voss Island, came rushing back together south of the castle. Fergan pulled his cloak tighter around his shoulders. The sliver of moon wasn't doing much to penetrate the cold fog pouring off the rivers and through the gates. The wet air kissed Fergan's neck, and he regretted his recent haircut. The king had mocked his long hair, but Fergan's lover had adored it. And now that his hair was short, the king mocked him for that. The fog billowed strangely at the iron gate, and Fergan froze. He embraced the power and peered through the fog. Once he held it, the power calmed him. He could see nothing threatening, and his hearing and sight were sharper. Fergan made himself continue past the gate. He didn't know if it was his imagination, but it felt like the fog pressed against the whole wall of the castle, like an invading army, and poured in through the breach of the iron gate. Fog pooled almost to his shoulders, and the torches mounted over the heads of the two guards did little to cup the mist. Nodding to them, Fergan turned and started walking back to the castle. He felt a weight between his shoulder blades, as of eyes boring into him, and repressed the urge to look over his shoulder. But as he walked toward the stables, the feeling only grew. The air felt so heavy, so thick it was like walking through soup. The fog seemed to curl around him in his passing and lick at the back of his bare neck, taunting him. With the rise of the fog, the moon and stars totally disappeared. The world was enveloped in cloud. Fergan stumbled as he passed by the corner of the stables. He threw a hand out to steady himself against the wood, but felt something yielding for a moment before it disappeared. Something like he'd touched a man standing there. Staggering back in fear, Fergan clawed for the embrace. He could see nothing. There was no one there. Finally, his talent came to him. He caught a brief flicker of movement into the stables, but it might have been his imagination.
Did I smell garlic?
Surely that could only be his imagination. But why would he imagine such a thing? He hesitated for a long moment, but he was a weak mage, not a weak man. He readied a fireball and drew his knife. He came wide around the corner, straining every sense magical and mundane. He jumped through the door and looked around frantically.
It's nothing.
The horses were in their stalls, their odors mingling with a heavy fog. Fergan probed the darkness for any sign of movement, but he saw nothing. The longer he looked, the more foolish he felt. Part of him thought he should go deeper into the stables, and part of him wanted to leave now. No one would know that he'd left. He could go to the other side of the castle and wander there. On the other hand, if he single-handedly caught an intruder, the king would doubtless reward him well. If Nya was good for anything, it was rewarding his friends. Slowly, Fergan drew the fire he prepared into visible form. It flickered a little, and then held, burning in his palm.
Shh, relax! It's only me! Would you stop scaring horses?
Fergan was so startled he dropped his knife and lost the fire in his hand. He wheeled around. It was just the stable master, a squat, bearded man from the Isle of Planga. Dorg Gamut came in behind Fergan, holding a lantern. He gave Fergan a look of pure disdain while the mage picked his knife gingerly out of a pile of horse droppings.
All right now, me pretties. Be coming down now, you hear? There you go.
Shh! I was just patrolling.
Use a lantern, you lad.
Dork stuck his lantern into Fergan's hand.
Scare me damn horses with witch fire.
It's mead fire. There's a difference.
Dork stormed out of the stables. Fergan ran outside. Dork was lying on the ground unconscious. Before he could shout anything, Fergan felt something hot in his neck. He reached a hand up and felt someone take the lantern gently out of his other hand. His muscles went rigid. The light went out.
What the hell have you done?
Mama Kay looked up as Durzo crashed through the door.
Good work. And with time left for a night out.
Durzo grinned sloppily. He reeked of alcohol and garlic.
I don't care about your binges. What have you done to Azoth?
Mama Kay looked at the still form lying on the bed in her home's guest room.
Oh, nothing. Check. Ain't nothing wrong with him.
What do you mean? He's unconscious! I came back here and the servants were all in a flutter because you'd appeared here with... They said it was a corpse! I came up and Azoth was here. I can't wake him. He's dead to the world. Tell me what you've done. Have you poisoned him?
He's dead. He has to be dead.
What do you mean?
Guinevere, gorgeous. I can't say. Someone threatened me. Someone who can do what they said. Said they'd come after Azo first, then you. And they knew about Vonda.
Mama Kay drew back. Who had the power to threaten Durzo? Who or what could scare Durzo Blint? Durzo sank onto a chair and put his face in his hands.
They have to think he's dead. Especially after tonight.
You faked killing Azoth?
Yes. To show I didn't care. To show they couldn't push me.
But you do care. And they can. I'll take care of the boy. Do you have any idea what to do with him once he wakes up?
He'll stay with the Drakes like we were planning. He's dead to this world.
What did you use?
Durzo looked at her, confused.
What poison? Oh, never mind. Just tell me, how long will he be unconscious?
I don't know.
Mama Kay's eyes narrowed. She wanted to slap him again. The man was insane. Even for a poisoner as gifted as Durzo, it was too easy to misjudge with a child. A child wasn't simply a scaled-down adult. Durzo could have killed him. Durzo might have killed him. Azoth might never recover. Or he might wake up and be an idiot, or not have a function of his limbs.
You knew he might die.
Sometimes you have to gamble.
You're starting to love that boy, and it scares the hell out of you. Part of you wants him dead, doesn't it, Durzo?
If I have to listen to your chit-chat, can't you at least give me a drink?
Tell me.
Life's empty. Love is failure. Better he dies now than gets us both killed later.
With that, Blint seemed to deflate. Mama Kay knew he would say no more.
How long will you be whoring?
I don't know.
Damn you! Longer or shorter than usual?
Longer. Definitely longer.
Lord General Agon could hear servants scurrying out of the way, see the guards at the entrances of the throne room shifting uncomfortably, and note that whatever staff members didn't absolutely need to be there were fleeing.
Possibly Godfrey, I know you could fuck something up so bad! Brand! You quivering mound of useless...
The Lord General mentally erased the long list of repulsive things he resembled and refocused his attention when Niner got to the point.
Shit of the world! What happened last night?
Your Majesty, we don't know.
What the hell do you mean you don't know?
What we do know is this. Someone broke into the castle. I suppose we can assume it was the man we've spoken about.
Durzo Blint?
Yes, Your Majesty. He apparently rendered unconscious one guard in the castle itself, and Fergan Safasti, and your stablemaster in the stables.
Cursed hell! What do you mean, rendered unconscious?
They didn't have any marks on them, and they couldn't remember anything. Though the guard had a small puncture wound on his neck, as if from a needle.
Shit! Cursed shite! Damn that blasted Fergan! I'll have his balls! There was nothing else?
We haven't found anything yet, sire. None of the guards outside your rooms, your wife's, your daughter's, or your son's reported seeing anything unusual.
It isn't fair! What have I done to deserve this?
Niner dropped down into his throne and immediately shot back up out of it.
Oh, gods! I'm feeling faint! I'm dying! Damn you all! I'm dying! Guards! Guards! Help!
General Agon ignored the pandemonium and strode to the throne. In a moment, he saw what he was looking for. A flat, long needle pointing up from a well-worn cushion on the throne. Lord General Agon pulled out the needle. There was a note tied to it.
Oh, God!
It could have been poisoned.
Oh, God!
starting to feel faint. I can't feel my hands.
Move aside.
There's a little man at the back of the room pushing soldiers out of his way. It was the king's physician.
I can't feel my balls.
Let him through.
Brant motioned to the physician and showed him the note.
The king will need some poppy wine. Maybe a lot. But he isn't poisoned.
Thank you.
Is it in my ass? Behind
General Agon, the king had pulled down his pants and was arching his neck, trying to see the wound on his buttock.
But believe me, I know how to deal with him.
Guards, escort the king to his apartments. Set a watch on the door with two captains inside the room. The rest of you, return to your duties.
Brant! I want him dead! Damn it! I want him dead!
Brant Agon didn't move until the throne room was empty once more. The king wanted to wage war against a shadow with no corporeal parts except the steel of its blades. That was what it would be to assassinate a wet boy, or worse.
How many men will die before the king's pride is saved?
My lord?
The Lord General turned to see one of the housekeepers. She had a wrapped bundle in her hands.
I was chosen to report for the housekeepers, but with the king gone and all, could I...
The general looked at her closely. She was an old woman, obviously afraid for her life. He bet she was chosen by having pulled a short straw.
What is it?
Us housekeepers found these. Someone left them in each of the royal bedchambers, sir.
The housekeeper handed Brant the bundle. 6 black daggers were inside it.
Where?
Under the royal family's pillows, sir.
Little feet pattered into Azoth's consciousness. It was a strange sound to hear when you were dead, but Azoth couldn't sort it out any other way. He tried to open his eyes and failed.
Maybe this is what it is to be dead.
Maybe you never left your body. Maybe you laid inside your corpse and had to just feel as you slowly decomposed. He hoped dogs didn't get to him, or wolves. He'd had terrifying dreams of a wolf grinning at him, yellow eyes ablaze. If he were stuck in his dead body, what would happen if they started tearing pieces of him off? Would he find oblivion like he'd finally fallen asleep, or would he just split into pieces of consciousness and slowly dissipate into the soil after passing through the bellies of 12 beasts? Something touched his face. Azoth's eyes focused on the source of the gasp. It was a little girl, maybe 5 years old. Her eyes so wide they covered half of her face.
Never seen a corpse.
Father!
Azoth fell back on the pillows.
Pillows? So I'm not dead.
That was probably supposed to be a good thing. When he woke again, time must have passed because the room was light and airy. Wide windows had been thrown open, and cherrywood furnishings and marble flooring gleamed in the sunlight. Azoth recognized the molded ceiling. He'd stared at it before. He was in Count Drake's guest room.
Back from the dead, are you? Here now, don't think at all. Eat.
Count Drake set a full plate of steaming eggs and ham in front of Azoth, along with a glass of well-watered wine. The food spoke directly with Azoth's stomach, completely bypassing higher cognitive functions. It was several minutes later when he realized the plate and the glass were both empty.
Better. Do you know who I am and where you are?
Azoth nodded slowly.
Good. Do you remember who you are?
Kyla.
I've been given some messages for you, but if you're not feeling well enough...
No, please.
Master Blint says that work now is to get ready for your new life and to get well. He says, keep your arse in bed. I expect you to be ready when I come to get you.
When is he coming, then?
A troubled look passed over the Count's face.
Well, not for a while. But you don't need to worry about that. You'll be living here permanently. You'll continue your lessons with your master, of course, but we'll be doing all we can to get the look of the street off you. Your master said to tell you that you aren't going to be well as soon as you'd expect. And there's something else I want to tell you, though, about your little friend.
You mean...
She's doing well, Kyla.
She is?
Her new family has named her Aline. She has good clothes, 3 meals a day. They're good people. They'll love her. She'll have a real life now. But if you're to be any use to her, you need to get well.
Kyla felt as if he were floating. The sunlight streaming through the window seemed brighter, sharper. An arrangement of orange roses and lavender glowed on the sill. He felt good in a way he hadn't since before Rat had become Black Dragon's fist.
They even took her to a mage and said she'd be fine, but she couldn't do anything for the scars.
Someone had just outlined all his happiness with tar.
I'm sorry, son, but you've done the best you can, and I promise you, she'll have a better life than she ever could have on the street.
I can't pay you yet. Not until I start getting my wages from Master... my master.
Oh, no, there's no rush. Pay me when you can. Oh, and one last thing your master asked me to pass along. He said, learn from people those things that will make you strong, and forget the rest. Listen much, speak little, get well, and enjoy this. It may be the only happy time of your life.
Kylo was bedridden for weeks. He tried to sleep as much as the Drakes told him to, but he had far too much time. He'd never had time before. He didn't like it. When he'd been on the street, every moment had been spent worrying about his next meal or worrying about Rat or any of the older boys or girls terrorizing him. With Master Blint, he'd been kept so busy training that he didn't have time to think. Sitting in bed all day and all night, he had nothing but time. Training was impossible. Reading was possible, but still excruciating. For a while, Azoth spent his time becoming Kyler. With the guidelines Master Blint had given him and the facts that anyone checking would find, he had made up more stories about his family, the area he was from, and the adventures he'd had, keeping them harmless, the way people like to think 11-year-olds' lives were. He soon mastered that, though, and most of the time thought of himself as Kyler. He was getting to know Count Drake's daughters, too. Elena was the pretty 5-year-old he'd scared half to death when he first woke. Mags was a gangly 8, and Sarah, an alternately awkward and aloof 12. They provided some diversion, but the Countess kept them from bothering Kyler so he could get his rest. The Count and Countess were fascinating, but Count Drake was working most of the time, and the Countess had definite ideas about 11-year-old boys, which didn't coincide at all with what Kyler knew about 11-year-old boys. He could never decide if she knew what he was and pretended not to so she could reform him, or if Count Drake had kept her in the dark. She was willowy, fair-skinned, and blue-eyed, an earthly vision of the heavenly beings the Drakes believed in. Like the Count, she had beliefs about serving Kyler herself, as if to prove that she didn't think herself above it. But it wasn't a false humility. When Kyler had gotten terribly ill the first week and vomited all over the floor, she'd come in and held him until he was done shaking, and then she'd rolled up her sleeves and cleaned up the vomit herself. He'd been too sick to even be properly horrified until long afterward. He couldn't count the time she came in to stuff him with food or check on how he was feeling or to read him stupid kid books. The books were full of valiant heroes who killed evil witches. Children never had to dig through heaps of garbage and vomit outside an inn looking for scraps of edible food. Older boys never tried to bugger them. They never abandoned their friends. The princesses they saved never had their faces battered beyond recognition. No one was ever so badly scarred that a mage couldn't fix it. Kyla hated the stories, but he knew the Countess only wanted the best for him. So he nodded and smiled and cheered when the heroes won, as they did every time. No wonder all the little nobles want to lead armies. If it were like the books their mothers read, it would be fun. It would be fun if you felt satisfied when the bad guy died rather than wanting to puke because you saw raw cartilage and gushing blood where you cut off an ear. Blood wafting in a million beautiful swirls with water as he bled to death, held under the water by the ropes you'd tied around his ankle. The Countess always interpreted his shaking and nausea after she was done with the stories as a need for more rest. So, after raising memories to haunt Kyler's room, she'd leave him with their angry ghosts. Every night, Kyler became Azoth. Every night, Azoth turned from the repair bay and saw Rat walking toward him, naked, hairy, massive, eyes glowing with lust. Every night, Azoth watched Rat splashing into the water, straining against the weight tied to his ankle. Every night, he watched Rat carve Doll Girl's face. The nightmares woke him, and he lay in bed fighting the memories. Azoth had been weak, but Azoth was no more. Kyler was strong. Kyler had acted. Kyler would be like Master Blint. He would never be afraid. It was better now. It was better to lie in a bed having nightmares than it was to listen to Jarl get buggered, weeping. Sleeping again only moved him from one nightmare to another. Day brought a little relief, and only slowly did the memories fade. Every morning he told himself that he'd done what he had to. That he'd had to kill Rat, that he'd had to abandon Doll Girl, that he'd had to leave Jarl, that it was best that he never see them again, that he couldn't have known what would happen to Doll Girl. He told himself life was empty, that he wasn't taking away anything of value when he took a life. He wouldn't have made it without Logan Geyer's visits. Every other day, Logan would come to see him, inevitably with Sarah Drake. At first, Kyler thought he came because he still felt guilty, but that soon passed. They enjoyed each other's company, and they became fast friends. Logan was strange. He was as smart as Jarl, and he'd read hundreds of books. Kyler didn't think he would survive for a week in the Warrens, but at the same time, he spoke about court politics as if it were all so easy. He knew the names, histories, friends, and enemies of scores of courtiers, and knew the major life events and important motivations of every highly ranked noble in the kingdom. Half the time, Kyler didn't know if he didn't understand what Logan was talking about because it was all part of the courtly life he'd never known, or just because Logan liked to use big words. Nonetheless, the friendship worked, and Sarah Drake helped it work by happening to stop by often so she could be with Logan. She filled the gaps. Kyler couldn't count the times he'd sat silent because he hadn't understood some reference Logan had made. The silence would begin to stretch, but before Logan could ever ask him why he didn't understand, Sarah would get uncomfortable and launch into something else entirely. The chatter might have driven Kyler mad if he hadn't been so thankful for it. Anyway, maybe this was how noble girls were. Kyler was sitting in bed one morning after having spent another night cowering under the covers. He dreamed that he had been the one beating Doll Girl, that it had been his feet kicking her, and exultation writhed in his eyes as her beauty melted in the heat of his fury. Count Drake came in. His fingers were ink-stained, and he looked tired. He pulled a chair close to the bed.
We think the danger's past.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry we've had to keep you in the dark, Kyler, but we had to make sure you didn't do anything rash. In the past few weeks, there have been a number of attempts on your master's life, and consequently, there are now four fewer wet boys in the city. After three attempts, your master let the king know that if there were any more attempts, the king would die next.
Master Blint killed the king?
Don't say that name, not even here. One of the nine, Dabin Vosha, the man in charge of the Sakage smuggling, heard about your master's threat to the king. He decided it would be a good time to make his own play for power, and he sent a wet boy after Durzo, thinking Durzo would either be killed or would kill the king in retaliation. Durzo found out and killed both the wet boy and Vosha.
You mean all this has been happening while I've been lying in bed?
There was no way you could help.
But what did Dabin Vosha have against my master?
I don't know. Maybe nothing. That's the way the Sakage works, Kyler. There are plots within plots, and most of them go nowhere. Most of them take one step and then die, like this one. If you worry about what everyone else is trying to do, you become a spectator and not a player. Anyway, the king learned of the last attempt on your master's life, and has become very frightened. Usually this would be good news, but he's rather clumsily consolidating his power. Logan is going to have to spend a while out of the city.
He was just starting to be my friend.
Believe me, son, a man like Logan Geyer will be your friend for life.
Someone slapped Kyler, not gently.
Wake up, boy.
Kyler clawed his way out of a nightmare and saw the face of Master Blint a foot away, about to slap him again.
Master Tulai.
Good to see you remember me, Kyler.
Master Blint got up and shut the door.
I don't have much time. Are you well yet? Don't lie to please me.
I'm still a little weak, sir, but I'm getting better.
Kyler's heart was pounding. He'd been desperate to see Master Blint for weeks, but now that he was here, Kyler was inexplicably angry.
You'll probably feel terrible for a few more weeks. Either the Kinder Barrel and the Avarada paste interacted in the way I didn't expect, or it might have something to do with your talent.
What's that mean? The talent?
Well, if it was that, sometimes a body doesn't react well to magic at first.
I mean, what does it mean? Will I be able to...
Fly, become invisible, scale walls, throw fire, walk as a god among mortals? Doubtful.
I was going to ask if I'll be able to move as fast as you do.
I don't know yet, Kyler. You'll be able to move faster than most men without the talent, but there aren't many who are as gifted as I am.
What will I be able to do, then?
You're weak, Kyler. We'll talk about this later.
I don't have anything to do. I can't even get out of bed. No one tells me anything.
Fine. It means everything and nothing. In Wadethrin or Alatera, they'd call you a mage, and six different schools would fight over where and what you should study, and what color robes you should wear. In Lodrakar and Kalidor, they'd call you a Meister, and you'd grow the veer on your arms like tattoos and worship your king as a god while you plotted how to stab his royal back. In Ymir, you'd be a stalker, an honored and honorable hunter of animals and sometimes men. In Friaku, you'd be a Gorathi, a furied warrior invincible in your clan, and one day a king versed in the arts of subjugation and slavery. In the West, well, you'd be in the ocean.
Blint grinned. Kyler didn't.
The mages guess, they'd say, hypothesize, to make it more respectable, that different countries produce different talents. And that's why men with pale skin and blue eyes become witches, while swarthy men are warrior Garathi. They say that's why the only mages they get from Gandu are healers. They see men with yellow skin who can heal and proclaim that yellow skin means healing. But they're wrong. Our world is divided, but the talent is one. Every people recognizes some form of magic, except for the Lycanot, who hate magic and simultaneously don't believe in it. But that's a different subject. But every people has its own expectations about magic. Gandu once produced some of the most destructive archmagi the world has known. They saw horrors you couldn't imagine, and because of that, they turned away from magic as weaponry. The only magic they value is healing magic. So as centuries have passed, they've added greatly to their knowledge of healing magics and lost most others. A Gandian who is greatly talented with fire is a shame to himself and his family.
So we never hear about him.
Right. There's an intersection between what the people around you know well enough to teach, what you're naturally good at, and what it is possible for you to learn. So the talent both is what it is, and it is what it has to be, like your mind.
Kyler just looked at him.
Take it this way. Some people can add long lists of numbers in their heads, right? And some can speak a dozen languages. To do that, they have to be smart, right?
Right.
But just because you can learn to add lists of numbers doesn't mean you will. But a woman who handles account books and has a gift for numbers can. Or a diplomat might have a gift for languages. But if he never learns another language, he'll still only know one.
Kyler nodded.
The woman with a head for numbers could probably learn another language if she worked hard enough, but she'll never be fluent in a dozen, and the man will never be able to add columns of numbers mentally. Do you see where this is going?
We know that I'm talented, but not how or how much. So you can't tell what I'll be able to do.
Right. From having me teach you, you'll definitely learn some things. You need to hide. Your talent will bend some light away. You need to walk quietly. It will muffle your steps. But like any talent, it has limits. If you walk in the noonday sun, you'll be seen. If you step on dry leaves, you'll be heard. You're talented. You're not a god. You might have the smoothest tongue in the world, but if you swear at the king, you'll meet the headsman.
If I know 12 languages, and you speak to me in a 13th, I won't know what you're saying.
Sometimes you do listen. I have to go now. Count Drake will take care of you. He's a good man, Kyla. Too good. You can trust him with your life. Just don't get him started on your soul. And think of yourself as Kyla, always. Azoth is dead.
That released all the memories and fear and anger that had been building up in Kyla like pressing the trigger plate of a crossbow. Just like that, his mask fell away and he was Azoth once more. Azoth grabbed Master Blint's arm.
Dead? I really don't...
No. No, you didn't. Does this look like hell? And they wouldn't let me visit heaven.
But Azoth could remember looking down at a knife sticking out of his chest. It had seemed so real. How could such a thing be?
I couldn't work for them. I'd be a bloody sword to them. They wouldn't be able to clean me, and they wouldn't be able to sheathe me. They'd have killed me eventually. It's easier to keep your eye on your enemies than on your friends.
So you've been killing wet boys?
For weeks he'd been keeping himself from thinking about that afternoon, but now he couldn't hold it back. He remembered the look in the Lord General's eyes, the utter shock. He remembered following those eyes to his own chest.
Nobody good would take the job on me. Men like Rabel and Gibbet and Severin get paid too well doing regular jobs to risk their lives taking on a real wet boy. Now remember, you're a Stern. You're proud of that, even if you're poor. The Sterns are barons, so they're upper nobility, but at the lowest level.
I know.
Was it just his imagination, or had Master Blint looked guilty? The wet boy fished in a pocket and popped a garlic clove in his mouth. If it were anyone else, Azoth would have sworn he was trying to distract him, rushing to get out of the room before Azoth could pin him down.
Why was I so eager to please a man who was willing to murder me? I thought he cared.
In the weeks that he'd been here in bed, Kyler had been alone. He'd left everything of his old life. He'd had real friends in Jarl and Doll Girl. They had cared about him. Now he was pretending to be friends with Logan Geyer, and even he had left. Not even Mama Kay came to visit. It almost physically hurt when the Count and Countess came in at the same time. They so obviously loved each other. They were safe and happy and real together. Even Logan and Sarah sometimes traded looks that made it obvious they liked each other. Those looks, that love, filled Kyla with a yearning so deep he thought his chest was going to cave in. It wasn't just hunger. A guild rat knew hunger like he knew the sewers where he huddled for warmth in the winter. Hunger wasn't comfortable, but it was familiar, and it was nothing to fear. This was a thirst, like his whole body was parched, drying up, about to crumple. He was dying of thirst on the shores of the world's biggest lake. None of it was for him. To him, that lake was an ocean. It was salt sea that if he drank would make him thirstier and thirstier until he went mad and died. Love was death for a wet boy. Madness and weakness and vulnerability and death. Not just for the wet boy himself, but also for anyone he loved. Everything about Azoth's life was death. He'd sworn that he would never love, but he'd never seen anything like what the Count and Countess shared when he'd promised that. It would be tolerable if anyone cared about him at all. In the time he'd been with Master Blint, he'd started to think that the wet boy liked him, cared about him. He'd believed that sometimes Master Blint was even proud of him. Even though everything about the gray-haired Lord General was foreign to Azoth, there was something right in the outrage and disbelief that had been in his eyes when Master Blint stabbed Azoth. He shouldn't have done it.
How could you do it? What's wrong with you? It wasn't right.
Damn you. Use your head. If you aren't smarter than this, I should have killed you. Did he believe me when I said I didn't care if they killed you?
You planned it all along?
Of course I did. Why do you think we bleached your hair? It was the only way to save you. Azoth had to die so Kyla could live. Otherwise, they had a hold. Any attachment you make in this life will be used against you. That's why we're strong. That's why four wet boys couldn't kill me, because I have no attachments. That's why you can't fall in love. It makes you weak. As soon as you find something you can't walk away from, you're trapped, doomed. If anyone thinks I give the hair on a rat's ass, what happens to you? You become a target for everyone.
How does he do it? How is he so strong?
Now look. Look at my damn hands.
Blint held them up. Both were empty. He made a fist and smacked it down on one arm. A bloody dagger sprouted from the opposite side. He jerked his hand away and the knife pulled back through his flesh. Then it frayed apart like smoke and disappeared.
I have a small talent with illusions, Kyla. I did a better job with yours because I had to sell it. But all I did was hit you in the back with a knockout needle, then hold the illusion until it took effect.
But I felt it.
Sure, you felt it. You felt me hit you, and you saw a dagger coming out of your chest. At the time, your body was trying to fight off a dozen minor poisons. You made what sense of it you could. It was a gamble. That illusion used up almost all of the power I can use in a day. If Agon's men had stormed the place, we would have been finished. The poisons I used wreaked havoc with your body. They could have killed you. Again, a gamble I had to make.
Master Blint does care what happens to me.
It hit him like lightning. Master Blint had risked using up his power to save Azoth. Even if it were just the affection a master might have for a talented apprentice, Blint's approval washed over Azoth, Kyler, as if the wet boy had given him a hug. No adult had ever cared what happened to him. The only other person who'd ever risked anything for him was Jarl, and Jarl was part of another life. The truth was, Azoth hated Azoth. Azoth was a coward, passive, weak, afraid, disloyal. Azoth had hesitated. Master Blint didn't know it, but the poisons on the needle had killed Azoth. He was Kyler now, and Kyler would be everything Azoth hadn't dared to be. In that moment, Azoth became Kyler, and Kyler became Blint's. If he had ever obeyed his master half-heartedly before, or out of fear, if he had ever fantasized about one day coming back and killing him for how hard the training was, it all dried up and blew away now. Master Blint was being hard on Kyler because life was hard. Life was hard, but Blint was harder, stronger, tougher than anything the Warrens could throw at him. He forbade love because love would destroy Kyler. Master Blint knew better than Kyler did. He was strong, and he would make Kyler strong. He was fierce, and Kyler would be fierce. But it was all for Kyler. It was all to protect him, to make him the best wet boy he could be. So it wasn't love. So what? It was something. Maybe nobles got to live on the shores of that lake and drink at their pleasure. That life hadn't been decreed for a guild rat. Kyler's life was a desert life. But there is life in the desert. And a small oasis had Kyler's name on it. There was no room for Azoth. The oasis was too small, and Azoth was too thirsty. But Kyler could do it. Kyler would do it. He'd make Master Blint proud.
Good.
Of course, Blint couldn't see what Kyler was thinking. But Kyler knew the eagerness in his eyes was unmistakable.
Now, boy, are you ready to become a sword in the shadows?